I call Senate Resources Committee to order. Today is Friday, January 30th, 2026, and the time is 3:30 p.m. Please turn off your cell phones. I'll check mine. Yes. All right. Members present today, Senator Kawasaki, Senator Myers, Senator Rauscher, Senator Dunbar, Vice Chair Senator Wilikowski, and I am Chair Giesel. I do expect Senator Klayman along shortly, but we have a quorum to conduct business. Thank you to Heather and Chloe for helping us out with the minutes and the audio. Today we're hearing a presentation, continuing the discussion of a potential gas pipeline. And today we will hear from the Department of Natural Resources, and on the phone will be the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. So I will invite the Department of Resources forward first, and Commissioner Designee John Crowther is here, and Director of Division of Oil and Gas, Derek Nottingham. So welcome. And then online for questions, let me make sure they're actually here. Jessie Chmielewski, she's a commissioner at AOGCC, along with Greg Wilson and Tom McKay, also commissioners. Tom McKay is an appointee at this time. And Dave Roby, Senior Reservoir Engineer at AOGCC. Welcome, Senator Klayman. We will go ahead and proceed with DNR's presentation. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Giesel and members of the committee. For the record, John Crowther, Commissioner Designee. I also have at times been referring to myself as Deputy Commissioner on the record, so I apologize for if I do it as well. It's great to be here before you, and important topic today. So without further ado, I'll turn it over to my colleague, Director Nottingham, and he'll start our presentation unless you have any framing remarks the committee would like to make.
No, please proceed. That's great.
Thank you, Chair Giesel. For the record, I'm Derek Nottingham, Director of the Division of Oil and Gas, and I'll just go ahead and move on to the first slide here and just kind of give you a brief overview of what we're going to talk about today, the scope and the objectives. What we're going to do is just kind of talk through some of the natural gas availability from the fields that we commonly hear referenced in regards to North Slope gas. That would be Prudhoe Bay, Point Thompson, the North Star Unit, Endicott, or otherwise known as the Duck Island Unit, and more recently the Alkaid, Talitha, and Tulik River units, kind of to the south of the main development on the North Slope. The resources that we're talking about in terms of gas in these fields represent about 30 TCF of gas. So in context, if you were to put it in, you know, kind of context of the Cook Inlet, that's over 400 years of gas supply that could be supplied to us, an area like the size of South Central. Obviously, the intent is to export that, the majority of that at some point in the future. But just that gives you an idea of the size of and volume of gas that we're talking about here. There are other producing fields that have what we call gas caps or associated gas that gas resources do exist, but we're not going to discuss those today. They're not really the ones that we typically refer to as being the primary contributors to the AK LNG project. And if you just kind of consider all of the unexplored gas on the North Slope, estimates are that that's well over 200 TCF of gas that's still yet to be explored on the North Slope, Beaufort Sea, Chukchi Sea, those regions. So lots of gas on the North Slope. What we're going to talk through today are DNR's characterizations of what the gas resources are, the analysis that we've done. Is primarily, or all of it's actually from public data, unless it's explicitly referenced as not. So these are, in general, a lot of our calculations, or they're referenced in the public. The pie chart that you see on the left there, that represents the kind of distribution of gas from Prudhoe Bay, North Star, Point Thompson, and Duck Island or Endicott. That gas cumulatively adds up to almost 30 BCF. or 30 TCF of gas. I apologize. You'll see the nomenclature in here, TCF, trillions of cubic feet, BCF, billions of cubic feet. And we kind of slip back and forth in between that a little bit. So apologies if it gets a little confusing. So that is what we would call known gas, because it comes from fields that have either utilized that gas in the past as part of their enhanced oil recovery, and they're continuing ongoing oil operations in those fields, and it's a very quantifiable amount of gas. We know that they produce significant rates and those kind of things. Now, in the Alkaid, Talitha, Tulik River area, the resource volumes that are that of gas that could be there are somewhere up to possibly 7 TCF or 7,000 BCF, as you see there. But there are still ongoing exploration activities, appraisal activities to understand that resource and prove its commerciality. To date, that there's been quite a bit of exploration wells that have tested and seen oil in tests of various kinds, but to date really haven't seen a commercially developable project there yet. But that work, that exploration work, continues to move forward.
So a question, Director Nottingham. Where are those three fields? Are they the hashed yellow ones on the pipeline route there?
Chair Giesel, yes, that's correct. They're the units that you see on the pipeline to the south of Prudhoe Bay.
So are those the units that Pantheon is working?
Yeah, Chair Giesel, yes, that's correct. It's Great Bear, Pantheon, and also 88 Energy is another operator in the Tulik River unit.
Okay. Very good. Any other questions from members? All right, seeing none, go ahead.
The next slide is just stepping through each one of these fields. We'll kind of go through a bit of the resource and kind of some characterization around that. The first one is Prudhoe Bay. I think everybody knows Prudhoe Bay is a really big oil field. It's one of the largest in the world. It's the largest in North America. Original oil in place was about 25 billion barrels. They're getting close to somewhere around 13 or 14 billion barrels of produced out of Prudhoe Bay to date. And the original gas or gas cap in place was 46 TCF. The resources available from Prudhoe are estimated at 22,000 BCF or 22 TCF at a maximum offtake rate of 3.6 BCF per day per the AOGCC 2015 offtake order. Some of the challenges that, you know, probably through the CCUS bill and just through the context of that, I think it's widely recognized that there's a fairly high CO2 content in Prudhoe Bay, somewhere in the 10 to 15% range. That CO2 content presents a unique challenge that would require a major facility to remove CO2 from the gas before it could be produced down the pipeline quality kind of specs. Another important point to note is Prudhoe Bay is still producing today, on average, about 250,000 barrels of oil a day. So roughly a little bit more than half of the North Slope oil.
Great, thank you. Senator Kawasaki has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Nottingham, for being here. Question about the offtake rates, and maybe just to explain how the pressurization of the field has worked so far, so that you've used gas to basically produce more oil, and if you start to take gas pressure out, you'll produce less. Can you kind of explain the dynamics and the mechanics of that, or maybe there might be somebody else online who can do that too.
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, I could probably go through a very basic explanation for you. However, the AOGCC is on the line, and I believe David Roby's on the line, so they may want him to kind of speak to that.
Sure. So, commissioners at AOGCC, I'll let you choose who you'd like to have answer that question.
You want to go ahead?
This is Dave Roby. I'm the senior reservoir engineer here. Senator Kawasaki, through the chair. When Prudhoe originally came online, they anticipated beginning gas sales 5 years after oil sales. And at that time, they expected the ultimate oil recovery to be about 9 billion barrels. So pretty much everything above that, the 14-ish billion that's been produced so far, the extra 5 billion is due to the gas not leaving Prudhoe Bay, keeping it there for repressurization and making MI and NGLs.
Follow up, Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you. Thanks for that explanation. So as a as there's offtake of gas at this 3.6 or 0.36 TCF per day amount, how does the pressurization of the field, how does it maintain itself? Or is there a point in which the field switches over to more of a gas field than an oil field?
Senator Kawasaki, through the chair. This is Dave Roby again. When they begin major gas sales, the pressure in Prudhoe Bay will start dropping, and there's really nothing that can be done about it. They'll reduce the amount of remaining oil that's recoverable. But that said, there is currently four times as much BOE, barrels of oil equivalent, in the gas than there is in the remaining liquids in the field.
So, Senator Madam Kawasaki. Chair, I guess the question then on the amount of offtake or the offtake rate is kind of important in the discussion and how much gas is going to be available for an LNG export facility. And how, so have you been involved with the discussions surrounding the AKLNG process and what they're expecting to be taking off at what times?
Senator Kawasaki, through the chair. I haven't been involved too much with the current AKLNG with Glenn Farm in charge. But back in 2015, when BP was the operator and came to us with the application, myself and others here were closely involved with them going through the project and looking at the reservoir information, economic information, stuff like that. I'm sure things are different now since it's been 10 plus years, but have good background understanding of how things are working.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Wilkowski.
I'm interested in hearing the interplay between DNR and AOGCC on, at some point we'll get to, or you'll get, somebody will get to have to make a decision about where's the value. I know AOGCC has the obligation to make sure there's no waste. Your obligation is to manage the resource for the maximum benefit of the people. So I'm trying to understand your role in this, and if it's probably important to know what the price of the gas sale is and what the revenue to the state would be, I would assume. And if I'm hearing gas is going to sell on the North Slope for $1 to maybe $1.25 per MCF, if it's different, let us know. State gets that current taxes 13 cents per MCF versus oil, which would sell, and the state would get both get royalties in both, but probably a much higher production tax. So the value to the state would be much higher. So I'm just curious how you're approaching this and determining what's in the best interests of the state.
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, John Crowther here, for the record. And I don't want to speak for my AFGCC colleagues, but, you know, they have the explicit authority about that offtake order, you know, what is the maximum allowable rate for production? that conserves the energy and ultimate recovery of the reservoir across barrels of oil and barrel of oil equivalent and gas. So I think that direct regulatory authority is there. As you alluded to, the department wants to be as informed and cooperate as much as possible to understand how that affects royalty value. And it, as you referenced, the price of both commodities one to another affects that. And the performance of the reservoir, I am not a reservoir engineer, so it eludes me to say the least. But the, you know, it's not a pure trade-off of we start producing gas, we stop producing oil. It's a very complex interplay between less pressure from gas reinjection, but also there's other opportunities to stimulate recovery through, you know, water maintenance and flooding the reservoir and such. So it's a complex equation for how gas offtake would influence recovery. But I believe the technical specs are gone through closely with AOGCC. The department will be working to model that as it affects kind of value and for making royalty disposition decisions.
Follow up, Senator Wilkowski.
Do taxes factor into that discussion? Because we've heard testimony that we capture the value of our resource, which we're required to constitutionally maximize via a series of property taxes and production taxes and royalties and corporate income taxes. And so do you factor in the value of those other things when you're determining whether or not we should be making that trade-off and allowing more gas at the expense of some oil?
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, the department works to model and understand those values as it relates to our royalty value, and we work with the Department of Revenue on the tax-related things, which are not directly in our jurisdiction. I think our input would be informational to AOGCC, but I'm not sure the scope of what they're required and what they're discretionally able to consider in the course of their review, but they might be able to answer that.
Would you like to ask AOGCC?
I'm curious, if I could, Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Kawasaki.
Pardon me. The first time we've been confused. Who has the ultimate authority? If DNR, in your analysis, says, you know what, it'd be better off if we delayed gas sales for a couple of years because we can make a couple billion dollars more in revenue for the state via oil sales, and you'll have declining oil sales with declining pressurization. Who wins that battle? How is that decision made?
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, I believe on a technical, what the offtake order is can be approved at is an AOGCC determination, and I'd let them speak to their exact criteria. Were the department to be aware of a material difference in outcomes, we may very well assess and share that information, depending on the specifics. But I have to let AOGCC speak to where their line is of what they're required to consider and what they're discretionarily able to consider.
But if I could,
yes,
just to clarify, who's responsible for making sure we get the maximum value for our resource? Is it DNR? And AOGCC is responsible for making sure we don't have waste, right?
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, I believe the department's responsible for maximizing the value to the greatest degree within our authorities and control. And that would involve as much understanding about the ultimate recovery of royalty and its impacts to its value, gas versus oil, as possible. The decision about what best leads to recovery of energy equivalent out of the reservoir as a question of pure authority, I believe, is with AOGCC as a final decision.
Senator, would you like to ask AOGCC?
You're looking at me. Well, I'd get to AOGCC when they come up and testify, but I think this is an important answer for us to get because I think actually the legislature is responsible for ensuring the maximum benefit of the resource. Shouldn't we know the price that the gas is being sold for and how much revenue we're getting before we embark on a project that could significantly diminish the value of the resource?
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, I think is in a philosophical sense, absolutely yes. And I think the department, any determinations we made about selecting royalty and value versus royalty in kind would be based on information about price of proposed sales. I'd have to let AOGCC speak to how they evaluate you know, price going into their authorities. I will note for clarification, I do believe they assess again, the technical specifics elude me personally. The energy equivalent, obviously oil and gas are on a spectrum, but there's a difference there, but there can be some comparison on an energy equivalent basis. And that often plays into relative price premiums one to another.
I should clarify for the committee, this is sort of a combined presentation. AOGCC is online, but they're going to tag team on this. So I'm going to call on AOGCC to answer Senator Wilikowski's question in terms of how they made that determination, what they think the offtake should be. So commissioners, who would like to speak to that?
Want me to say something? This is Jesse Chmielewski, Senator Wilikowski through the chair. I'm going to just reference Conservation Order 341F, as in Frank, which we can provide for you, but it's on our website. But in 2015, I wasn't at the AOGCC, but the people here did a thorough review, reviewing reservoir simulation results, and concluded that the ultimate recovery from the Prudhoe oil pool could only be maximized with major gas sales, as there are significantly more barrels of oil equivalent of reserves in the form of gas within the pool than there are in the liquids that remain within the pool. And so AOGCC, as you know, does not consider taxes or the price of the gas. We're strictly looking at greatest ultimate recovery of the resource.
Follow-up question, Senator Wilikowski?
Yeah, and it's Article 8, Section 2 says the legislature shall provide for the utilization, development, and conservation of all natural resources belonging to the state, including land and waters, for the maximum benefit of the people. So it seems to me that one of the things that we look at for maximum benefit is how much revenue we get to the state. And it seems to me like it would be important for us to know how much revenue we're going to get from the if we start taking gas off of Prudhoe Bay and we're getting it at a tax rate and a revenue and a royalty rate, quite frankly, that's much lower than we'd probably get for our oil. That's all I'm saying. And I'm not sure that's what AOGC is saying. AOGC is saying they're looking at a barrel of oil equivalent. They're not looking at the revenue aspect of this. We have a $2 billion deficit that we have to solve. So for us, the revenue aspect is very important. So I'm curious, who's looking out for the revenue aspect of this, especially considering the fact that we have no idea what this gas is even being sold. I mean, we have general things that we're being told sort of out there in hearsay, but I mean, shouldn't we have some sort of modeling? Shouldn't we have some sort of public information that is available to us about the value of what we're getting?
Commissioner?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, I believe that in coordination with the Department of Revenue, we potentially would be able to present information based on assumptions of gas production volume, oil production impacts over time, and price based on a variety of assumptions. Information about kind of net revenue balance and such. It's a complex suite of information and formulas, but I believe there's work done at the executive level on those questions.
Senator Dunbar, did I see your hand up?
Yes, Madam Chair, but it's all right. Thank you.
All right, Senator Klayman.
Follow up for Commissioner Crowder. I appreciate the notion of saying this is kind of a philosophical question, but I guess as I listen to it, I think it's more of a math question. And that doesn't mean it's a simple math question. I agree with you because part of what you're trying to figure out is if you're injecting a certain amount of gas, what does that do to your oil pressures and oil coming up? And that's at some level that would be in the engineer's world, I think, in theory, fairly straightforward, but actually I'm sure it can't be because these are incredibly complex oil fields that have been developed and lots of engineers involved and lots of work. But it seems to me that really having a better understanding to show to us if you're reducing the gas that's going down, that's going to reduce the oil that's coming up. And I think it's been a given for decades that we make more money on oil than we do on gas. But as the field characteristics change, there may become a point at which that changes. But it seems to me that math problem is something that we should have a lot more information about, because there certainly should be a price at the value of the gas. It's more effective to continue to pump all of it down into the wells to get more oil out. And there's also a price at oil. It gets so low that it becomes more worth it to get the gas out, because the gas starts becoming more valuable in ways than the oil. But I see it more than philosophical.
Senator Clayman, through the chair, your point's well taken. I absolutely is a mathematical, quantitative question, and an important one. I think today we're prepared to present about gas volume on a general scale. But of course, as the committee wants more information about these questions, we can work with the Department of Revenue and other entities as appropriate to present what we're able to.
And we can request that going forward. Before we leave this slide, though, I would like to ask Commissioner Chmielewski, taking the gas off of Prudhoe Bay, how does that ripple out to the pressure in the fields at Milne Point and Kuparuk River? Is there – I don't know what the connectivity is underground.
Chair Kiesel, this is Jesse Chmielewski. The fields are really not connected in that way. So selling the gas from Prudhoe Bay should not affect the reservoir maintenance or pressure maintenance of those other fields you referenced.
Thank you. Any other questions on this slide? All right, seeing none, I'll let you proceed. I think we're on slide 5 now. Are we on Point Thompson now? Yeah. Good.
To the chair, for the record, that's the one I'm looking for. Derek Nottingham again. So just for clarity's sake, Prudhoe Bay is not one of the primary targets, is my understanding, of AKLNG phase 1. It's probably in later phase 2, when you get a kind of full scale exports of gas out of Alaska. So that's just another consideration when we're kind of walking through these. We're walking through these more in terms of the resource size and not where they stand in relation to the phasing of the project as we know it. So Point Thompson, I think most people are pretty familiar with the name, 60 miles or so east of Prudhoe Bay. I think it's actually 44 miles east of Dead Horse, so a little bit of a discrepancy in the mileage there. 8 BCF, I know these numbers like the back of my hand and I get them confused. It's 8 TCF of gas originally in place. Estimated 6 TCF or 6,000 BCF of gas, of resource in what's a retrograde condensate reservoir. Per AOGCC in 2015, also the maximum offtake rate from the Point Thompson Reservoir was anticipated to be 1.1 BCF per day. There is currently no gas pipeline that traverses that 40 to 60 miles from Point Thompson back into the main infrastructure there at Prudhoe Bay. And as I mentioned, it's a retrograde condensate reservoir, so without getting into too much technical detail, when you deplete the pressure in and around the wells or in the reservoir, the liquids that we actually produce now, they start to fall out in the reservoir, and they kind of block flow. So it creates sort of these challenges around the flow capability of the reservoir, the wells, and those kind of things. So that's why it's really important to kind of continually to maximize oil recovery out of the reservoir. Inject the gas, maintain the pressure, and then you can recover those liquids without as much impediment. We understand the CO2 content to be lower than Prudhoe Bay. It's not zero, but it's not nearly the 10 to 15% that you see in Prudhoe Bay. So I guess I would characterize it as marginal. how much treatment would be required to remove that CO2, if at all, kind of send it down the pipeline as a sales gas. Currently, the field's producing a little over 4,000 barrels a day. The Point Thompson 17 well has it had some of those impacts, possibly from the retrograde condensate, possibly from some other completion issues. It's not really quite certain what that is. The operator is actually drilling another well to up the offtake rate out there to get it closer or above the 10,000 barrels a day that it historically is targeted.
So there's plans to put in a pipeline?
Through the Chair Giesel, there would have to be a gas pipeline from Point Thompson back into the main pipeline from Prudhoe Bay. Yes.
Has that been permitted? Pipe ordered? Do you know what phase that's in?
Chair Giesel, it has not been permitted as a kind of a 38-35 from our division. What has been permitted is the line, as I understand it, the main right-of-way, the AKLNG right-of-way from Prudhoe. However, it's fairly typical process for us to permit a kind of inter-field pipeline as part of our normal process at DNR.
Gotcha. Yes, Senator Wilikowski, question.
Yeah, thank you. There have been several settlement agreements entered into. One, an extension, September 10th, 2018, regarding the Point Thompson unit. And the extension period was to continue until DNR provides notice to all parties that either there's a final investment decision on the Alaska LNG project or work on the Alaska LNG is no longer progressing. I'm curious, what is the status of that agreement and extension?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, John Crowther for the record. So that letter agreement dating to 2018, as you referenced, it provides a bit of a binary path between a statement of abandonment of the project, which is obviously not the scenario we're in, and a final investment decision on the project, which triggers some of the development benchmarks. I don't want to speak definitively to what positions the Department of Law may take. We are looking closely at that agreement because we do want to ensure that maximum development's occurring at the unit consistent on a timeline that enables either phase one or phase two gas sales as necessary. So we have not triggered that FID action at this time. But we are working with the operator through the process of reviewing their plans of development for activity in the unit. As Director Nottingham referenced, I'm sorry for a little discursion here. As Director Nottingham referenced, there is a well being drilled right now with an intent of increasing potential throughput out of that facility in that unit, which we view as kind of consistent with either phase one or phase two progress. And we're going to keep looking both at that letter agreement and the underlying settlement agreement for how to make sure that continued activity at Point Thompson is a focus.
Follow-up, Senator Wilikowski.
Could you just refresh us on the obligations that the operator had under the terms of that agreement and what specifically they are doing and have done in the last 6 years, 8 years to meet the terms of that settlement?
Yes, Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, at a high level, the settlement agreement, and I don't have it in front of me, I would misstate the dates to kind of describe it exactly, but it called for a series of investments in the startup of the unit around the 2011-2012 timeframe to start permitting the development, construct it, and then put it into operation at the IPS, the initial production system. Those efforts were proceeded with. The IPS was stood up and began operation. I missed the exact year, but shortly thereafter, in a few years after that period, due to the fact that it was fed by one well, there were some challenges hitting that volumetric requirement. The department worked throughout that time to encourage and promote continued investment in the field. The Alaska LNG project in its prior iteration was focused on continuing to see that development, and that the prior negotiations and a prior structure of the project is what led to that 2018 letter agreement that in a sense paused some of those requirements pending that binary path of FID on the project or abandonment of the project. I think I skipped over the original settlement agreement set successive deadlines for development in essentially kind of concentric rings of the unit, but also in scale for providing gas by certain timelines. Because of that 2018 letter agreement, those timelines have been paused. Were those original timelines to come back into place with a FID under the terms of that 18 agreement, we would see that activity hopefully proceed on that schedule. I will say it is a product of negotiation, and it's a very important thing for the state to see that development. And I think the state is interested in negotiating with that operator and owner group to see as much activity there as we can. And the indications of having a well drilled this winter is encouraging to us that they're taking that commitment seriously.
Follow up, Senator Wilkowski.
So just so we're clear, so it says in the agreement that shall provide notice to all parties to the settlement agreement. It shall continue until there is a final investment decision of an, and it's in capitals, Alaska LNG project. Is it the department's interpretation that was under a different project, but that the current project is still under the terms, still obligates the operator under the terms of the settlement agreement?
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, I don't want to compromise the state's negotiating or interpretive position on this agreement at all. I think we want to preserve our ability to assert that the development obligations consistent with the underlying leases, the original settlement agreement, and the letter agreement can be as enforceable and appropriate for the situation as possible. And particularly the situation we find ourselves in is the potential gas sales for phase one and an anticipated phase two. And so we would hope and potentially want to take negotiation or enforcement action under those agreements to make sure that development was occurring on track to meet action for either phase one or phase two.
Madam Chair.
Senator Myers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I was looking at the previous slide, the Prudhoe Bay unit, and the AOGCC had put out the maximum offtake at 3.6 BSCF a day. If I remember right, Glenn Ford had said that their plan is to have the export facility set up to do 20 million tons a year of LNG. And I'm asking if you please correct me if my math is wrong here, but if I'm understanding it correctly, 20 million tons a year translates to approximately 2.6 BSCF a day. So what I'm seeing here is that at least right away, Prudhoe Bay by itself would, unless something has drastically changed in the last decade, Prudhoe Bay by itself can supply the gas line, at least for the first few years. And so obviously we want to get Point Thompson online, but we do have a little bit of time there. Is that accurate?
Senator Myers, through the chair, I'll speak to that. John Crow, for the record, I'll speak to that briefly. My colleague Derek Nottingham may want to speak a little more technically. I think it's true that potential volumes of sales, even at the phase two level, may not hit the full offtake order approved by OGCC. And there might be commercial reasons why, or operational reasons why, more or less offtake is demanded at a different time. Obviously, the AOGCC order would cap that, so you couldn't go over it. There may be strategic, commercial, royalty, other decisions about sequencing of gas. And so it's not necessarily that we would want to, excuse the lay term, tap into Prudhoe Bay, exhaust it, and then move on. We might want Point Thompson first. Mm-hmm. We might want to blend first. there might be divergent views about that. And so I do think for phase two, there's that discussion is ongoing. And I think it's not necessarily that we have time, so to speak. But that's again, why we're encouraged to see activity this winter, in a sense, starting to potentially have more well stock and be prepared for development at some additional scale.
Oh, okay.
Follow up, Senator Myers?
Yeah, just a quick question for the AOGCC. I believe they said that that this offtake order for the gas at least at Prudhoe, I wasn't sure if Point Thompson was included in that, came out in 2015. I was curious how often they update those offtake orders, or if they think that's going to be updated at some point soon if the gas line does start construction.
So, Commissioner Chmielewski, are you the one to answer that question?
Yes, this is Jesse Chmielewski through the chair. Thank you for the question. Both orders were issued in 2015. Conservation Order 719 is the one that addresses Point Thompson specifically. So the process for updating it is it has not been updated, but it is still currently valid. So to the extent that it meets the needs of Glen Farm, it could stay as is. The process to renew would typically come from the operator of the field who wished to renew it. So it could be Hillport for Prudhoe, Hillport for Point Thompson. So they would submit an application to update or revise the gas offtake order, and then we would consider the information they provided, most likely hold a hearing and then issue a follow-up order. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Commissioner, we had a presentation, I believe it was last meeting, it might have been two meetings ago, from Gaffney Klein, that had a very interesting, very detailed discussion about everything, but in particular about what FID actually means. And he described it at the consultant described it as both sort of a moment, but also a process that could take potentially years. And so my question gets back to Senator Wilkowski's question about the settlement agreement at Point Thompson. Is it immediate, sort of the first announcement of FID? Is that what triggers it? Or is there some other, you know, technical or legal point along in that process that triggers the settlement agreement? And do you anticipate it might be something that is either negotiated or even litigated with the operator?
Senator Dunbar through the chair, John Crowther for the record. I appreciate the question. I think as you alluded to in the final part of it, it's certainly something that may be the subject of negotiation or litigation as it's an legal agreement and its interpretation application is material. So I don't want to say anything that could at all constrain the state's position. I will say a little tongue in cheek, but also seriously, if there's a interpretive space for the DNR commissioner, the DNR commissioner is obligated to interpret it as favorably to the state as possible. And so I think that's the approach we would take on any interpretive question about that agreement in light of the full balance of state interests. So I know that may seem like a general response, but I think when and how that agreement affects development in the field is a very important operational and interpretive question.
Kind of a brief follow-up.
Yes, Senator Dunbar.
Again, this question also a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but what does FID mean to you in this context?
Thank you, Senator Dunbar, through the chair. Not at all speaking as an interpretive question of the particular 2018 legal agreement or meant to reference that in any way. I think it is, at the department we deal with the question of FIDs in a lot of different contexts, and we obviously deal with them in oil and gas projects, midstream infrastructure projects, as Director Nottingham alluded to. We see in interfield pipelines. We also see mining. We see other large industrial activities. Very often it's focusing on securing financing, securing customers, securing a development plan, a feasibility. And so all of those things I think are relevant, but I suspect, having not reviewed that presentation from Gaffney Klein closely, their discussion about it can be a moment in time or a period. I think that generally matches with, we see a variety across different kinds of projects with different kinds of scopes. So.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, I'll let you proceed. I don't see any other questions. Oh, Senator Wilkowski.
What does the current plan of development at Prudhoe Bay require the operator to do? Point Thompson.
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski. In general, it requires them to ensure that production operations are ongoing and maximized or optimized. To perform any well work or necessary operations to keep their well flowing, and to drill this year in particular, to drill and increase the gas offtake rate from where it is, which is a suppressed level compared to historical, back up to the facility maximum of I think it's around 200 million cubic feet per day. There may be some other requirements in there that I'm not remembering. I do have a lot of those plans of development in my head, but I think those are the general requirements in the Point Thompson POD.
Follow-up, Senator Wilkowski.
And is it the department's position that Exxon for the last 8 years, or I guess Hillcorp now, is complying with all the terms of the plan of development and has complied with all the terms of the plan of development? And the settlement agreement.
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, John Crowther for the record. Again, not wanting to say anything that would compromise the state's ability to assert or litigate any interpretive question. We understand they have been actively developing the field, producing from the one well to fill the IPS to the extent of operational capacity. And there were operational challenges, both with the pipeline had some issues, and then there was also some issues around the reservoir and the well performance over the last several years. The operator has worked to respond to those and restore that. And as Director Nottingham just alluded, in their current POD program, they're obligated to work on drilling this well to try and restore the IPS to full capacity, increase the gas handling. We understand they are doing that and pursuing that well, and that's on track.
Follow-up, Senator Wilkowski.
This is one of the largest gas reserves, I believe, in North America, and it's extremely valuable condensate there. How many wells have they actually developed or explored in the last 8 years? And how much oil and gas have they actually produced in the last 8 years?
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, my colleague Derek Nottingham is wisely steering me to our own chart, which shows those information, so I won't blunder through it off the top of my head. You can see there in the lower right of our chart here, in the lower left of that bar of four items, the total barrels of oil and gas, natural gas liquids produced, 19 million approximately. As alluded to previously in the discussion, that has been for periods below that 10,000 barrels per day IPS target. We've understood the operator to be working to hit that target, but it's only been hit for limited periods in that eight-year period. That's been produced primarily, I believe, from one production well and two injection wells. And as discussed previously, having an additional production well, which hopefully will come online this year, will be a very positive thing for meeting that obligation and an additional production.
Very good. You know, the questions on Point Thompson are important because it's been alluded to that the first gas for the pipeline, for the AKLNG pipeline, would come from Point Thompson because of its low CO2 content. But now we're aware that there's no gas pipeline there yet. So that's very interesting. Thank you. I don't see any other questions. I'll let you go on to slide number six.
Thank you, Chair Giesel. For the record, Derek Nottingham again. And now we're going to kind of talk about is one of the satellite fields of Prudhoe Bay, North Star, the North Star unit. It's a joint state-federal unit 12 miles north of Prudhoe Bay. The resources that we estimate there are around a little less than a TCF, so significantly smaller than Prudhoe Bay or Point Thompson. Nevertheless, that's a sizable amount of gas. I can't do the math quick enough in my head to understand how many years of of Cook Inlet, I guess that would be 11 or 12 years of Cook Inlet gas. So to put it in context, there is a gas line that runs from Prudhoe Bay to North Star, as we understand, that was used to actually export gas out of the Prudhoe Bay field into North Star for some gas for enhanced oil operations, actually more for fuel gas and those kind of things. So there has been imported gas into North Star from Prudhoe Bay in the past. Could that 10-inch line, the line that exists, be turned around and used for production out of? I think that's a very good possibility. I don't know that it's been used in quite a number of years, though. In the gas production rate, you know, when you think about Point Thompson or Prudhoe, you know, Point Thompson's injecting at 200 million cubic feet a day or so when they're up on step. Prudhoe's injecting at 8 BCF a day, just phenomenal rates. It's uncertain how much rate will come back from North Star, mainly because there could be some facility limitations or pipeline limitations. But this is one that also does have what we understand to be a lower CO2 content than Prudhoe. And I think could be and may have already been represented in the public as a potential first starter for gas for the pipeline project.
Gotcha. Thank you. So let me ask Commissioner Chmielewski, has AOGCC opined about use of the gas from North Star unit?
Chair Kiesel, this is Jesse Chmielewski. No, the AOGCC has not considered producing our gas offtake from North Star at this time. Thank you.
Thank you. Further questions on slide number 6? Seeing none, I'll let you go on to slide number 7.
Thank you, Chair Kiesel. The next slide is the Duck Island unit, or is more commonly referred to, I think, is Endicott. So this unit is a kind of it's an offshore island that's 4 miles offshore in 2 to 14 feet of water. They connected by a gravel road causeway and about 14 miles east of Prudhoe. Resources there are around half a TCF, so a little less than 10 years out of Cook Inlet. And infrastructure, unclear that they could actually produce today back to the Prudhoe Bay infrastructure with a gas line. There is an oil line, obviously. They currently do sell some fuel gas to the Badami field. So the infrastructure might need to be a little bit more beefed up in order to export gas out of here. I think predominantly the main challenge would be that the CO2 content is, it seems like based on public data, it's fairly high. And so it's probably not, you know, as high on the target list as a Point Thompson or North Star for first gas into the kind of phase one part of the pipeline.
All right, I see no questions. Slide 8.
Thank you, Chair Kiesel. So as we kind of move through this, we're looking a little bit further south down the Dalton Highway, south of Prudhoe Bay, to the Alcade, Talitha, and Tulik River units. These are the units where we were earlier discussing that Great Bear Pantheon and 88 Energy have been doing exploration and appraisal wells. There's several wells that have been drilled and have – and most have found some oil in well logs, cores, and even some short-term production tests. There's been oil produced to surface. The Alcade 1, I believe, has actually tested several hundred barrels of oil and a couple of million cubic feet of gas, I believe, is kind of the test rates from that well. However, in general, they haven't really found like what we would say is a commercial rate as of yet. It's still very much in a exploratory kind of appraisal phase. the I guess one of the good things about this kind of ongoing exploration is the gas that they're finding that's associated with the oil is fairly low CO2 as we understand it. This type of operation that you'd expect to see down here is the reservoirs are much, as far as I can tell, tighter, lower permeability is what I mean by that, than what you'd see at Point Thompson or Prudhoe Bay or some of the mega fields like that. So the expectation is that the development would probably be more like a lower 48, I guess, shale development with really long horizontal wells with multi-stage fracks and those kind of things in them. The well tests that we've seen and have understood from some of the public information about them, there's generally been a reasonable amount of water that's come along with them. So they either haven't tested the wells long enough to see that water dissipate, or in general, the reservoirs that they found may bring a lot of water. And so that presents some facility challenges to handle that water and dispose of it. The gas that comes along with it, really, they don't necessarily plan on reinjecting that gas. So they would need a place to get rid of it. And the AKLNG line would be a natural place and a good place for them to be able to do that. So that's where this really ties into the gas project is there's, as you see there, potentially over 7 TCF of resource that gas resource that could be there and needing a place for it to go, essentially.
Very good. Yes, Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is all, you know, way out in the future. You know, this is a little bit more speculative, but you mentioned the need to treat some of the gas before it goes into the pipe. Can you speak about where that exactly would take place? So, for example, if the main treatment facility is in Prudhoe Bay, and this is south of Prudhoe Bay, would it have to be sort of shipped up to the treatment facility and then put in the pipe to head back down, or there would be another treatment facility down here?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, my understanding is that the CO2 in this gas may be minimal enough that it doesn't need to be treated in order to get down to pipeline specs. For the Prudhoe Bay field, the Alaska CCUS facility is kind of the plan for treating like the Prudhoe Bay and other future gas fields that have a high CO2 content. And that would be, I don't know exactly where to point to it on the map, but just south of the Prudhoe Bay field, I believe.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Senator Wilikowski.
Is it a requirement that we have a CC carbon capture facility in place before gas is developed and produced for the gas pipeline?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, I don't want to definitively speak, but it's not a state authorization. I believe the Federal Department of Energy authorization does contemplate some requirement for CO2 disposal in sequestration underground.
Follow up, Senator Wilikowski.
So how quickly can we get that authorization and facility reservoir available to accept the carbon?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, I think that a project to execute that project, I'd have to let AGDC and Glenfarne speak to kind of their schedule for that at a phase two step. We have our leasing and licensing regulations in place. We also have the possibility for storage in existing oil reservoirs, and we understand the AOGCC regulations are in public process now. They might be able to speak to a timeline, but we think we're ready to receive such an authorization, but there may be operational considerations and on a timeline that Glenfarne would be better positioned to speak to.
Further questions, Senator Wilikowski? All right. I'll let you proceed. We don't have other questions on the slide. So now we're on number 9.
Thank you, Chair Giesel. And this is Derek Nottingham again. And this is the final slide. And this slide really kind of just summarizes some of these characterizations that we've been talking about regarding the, you know, the facility requirements or pipeline requirements as we understand them, and then the CO2 content, as well as the resource estimates that are out there. And with that, I'll just kind of open it up for any further questions.
Thank you. Senator Rauscher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I was just wondering, 60 miles of pipe or so to from Thompson to Prudhoe Bay, that shouldn't take too long to build, would it?
Through the chair, Senator Rauscher.
Or Exxon?
I don't know that I can speak of the exact timelines for building pipe, but I don't think it would take, you know, too terribly long. You know, it, if you consider that the pipeline from the North Slope to down to the Kenai is going to be 800 miles, and right, the expectation is, you know, a couple of years maybe is what I understand. So it would definitively be less than that if you kind of consider what some of the pipe projects that have been done recently on the North Slope with Willow and Pika, and those have been accomplished in one or two winter seasons. So
follow up,
Senator Rauscher.
Do you know if they've acquired any permits for future laying of that pipe so far? Or?
Through the chair, Senator Rauscher, I'm not aware of any, but I may be just kind of out of the loop on the information so far. Yeah.
Thank you.
Further questions for Department of Natural Resources or AOGC, which is online? Cool. All right. Thank you very much for being here today. With that ends the presentations today. I do have some additional information I wanted to discuss today, and it does not involve DNR. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
You looked a little apprehensive there. Sorry. You know, as we've been putting together these meetings, one of the things I kept asking my staff is, I want to hear from 8-Star. We know that Glenfarne has 75% of this project, but 8-Star is holding the other 25% on behalf of the state. So I began pursuing it, and on your desks are what I found out. Initially, in asking the questions, we were actually referred to a lobbyist of Glenfarne's, and we didn't really get much of an answer, so we dug into it, and I think you can see here on the first page the 8-Star contact information from the Federal Department of Transportation FAST 41 project dashboard indicates that 8-Star is made up of apparently Glenfarne individuals, three of them. So that seemed a little odd to me, but you have that document there. And then, there's several documents here that go on and on. But then we dug into exactly what 8-Star was. And you'll find that detail starting on a page. This is from, I believe, the Department of DCCED, mm-hmm. Commerce and Community Economic Development. And so you see that 8-Star is a limited liability company, and their home state is Delaware. They have a mailing address on C Street in Anchorage. Their registered agent is a corporate service company on Old Dairy Road in Juneau. My staff looked into that, and there isn't anything there as far as we can tell. So perhaps there's more information we haven't uncovered, but it doesn't appear that that's actually a legitimate address. The registration at DCCED is also their certificate of registration. And it was signed by Mr. Richards. But again, I'm not seeing who are the board members that are holding the 25% that allegedly is potentially our share. And then you see yet another corporate registration document. So I wanted to share this with you. I wanted to hear from these folks how they're managing our 25%. And it's difficult to find any board members other than the people, the Glen Fern staff that make up the entities named here in the FAST Act. So I wanted to just raise that issue. It is a concern. Any questions? Yes, Senator Dunbar.
Sir, comment and a question. I think a lot of us, Delaware is sort of a fairly standard place to incorporate a corporation because of their very, well, they have a court of the chancery. Anyway, there's a variety of reasons why people go to Delaware. Have we spoken or have your staff spoken with Frank Richards? I mean, it seems like he's listed on these documents and is he an employee? He's an employee of the state, correct? Or
yes.
Okay.
Oh, yes.
Has he been forthcoming with your questions?
We will be pursuing that.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes, Senator Klayman.
Was your staff finding that there's no structures at all at the 8585 address, Old Dairy Road, or just nothing that looks like the company?
Let me have my staff come forward and answer your question. Thank you. Anything else? Senator Myers, did you have a question?
Oh, no, I know what's at the building. I haven't been inside enough to know what is at the particular suite, but I know what's in that building. But if your staff's going to answer, then I'll leave it to him.
Sure.
For the record, into my harvest and staff to Senator Giesel, through the chair, Senator Klayman, to answer your question. We have not physically gone to the building, but there's not a company with that name listed on the website of the building owner. There are a number of other businesses that are located at that site that are listed on that, but this entity was not.
Is the entity that the 8-star entity is not listed, or the other one that's listed on the listing? Hold on, called Corporation Service Company.
That would be the Corporation Service Company through the chair, Senator Klayman.
So, Corporation Service Company was listed.
They are not listed at that address through the property management company that we could find.
So I'll be digging into this more. If any members get information, that'd be great for us to know, because I'd like to hear from 8-Star. We're hearing from Glen Fern. Yes.
If I may, Madam Chair, another interesting thing of note was that on all of these filing documents, what you see is that 8-Star, Glen Fern, and AGDC all share the same address and suite at their Anchorage office. So that was also of interest.
So,
yes, Senator Myers.
Thank you. So I'm no expert in corporate law here, but it's my understanding that 8-Star only exists as a joint subsidiary of AGDC and Glen Fern. So to me, it doesn't surprise me that the only contacts we have immediately translate back to one of those two companies.
This is apparently true. And so I will be asking these three individuals, there are names right here, to please join us at a committee meeting and tell us about the 25% and how it's being managed. Senator Klayman.
In my life as a private or lawyer that works in sometimes corporate world, this address is familiar to me. It's familiar to me because I have seen other companies that have this entity as a service provider. I mean, it's the general it's very, very common for business entities, especially out-of-state business entities, because they have to have an in-state service provider that's listed. It's very common to that them to have a company that basically accepts service for them. And so I recognize this address as one I've seen on, for other businesses that have this Juno address as their service provider. The odd thing to me is that I want to know who's in suite. Is it 205? I want to know who's at the front door of 205, because it may well be that this
I Googled it.
But that's the structure, not in suite 205 at the building.
Right.
So it might be Smith and Company, such and such, and then Smith and Company may have three or four businesses within suite 205. I don't know the answer, but I definitively recognize that company as one I have seen as the in-state service provider for other businesses that I was looking up at various points in time. And there's a number of other entities that if you say find an in-state service provider, you can Google that and you'll find 10 different businesses in Alaska that are more than happy to for an annual fee to accept service for your company. And then they ensure that your company is notified and that checks off certain service or process providers. So I'm not surprised by the fact they have that as their service provider.
Very good. Thank you. Well, I just wanted to share that information with the committee. We will be asking those three people that are listed to appear with us. All right. With no further business today, our next meeting will be Monday, February 2nd at 3:30. We're going to hear comments from North Slope producers related to the gas pipeline and their participation in it. So at this time, the meeting will stand adjourned. Let the record reflect. The time is 4:41 p.m.